Final hour fist pump time on the fan cam. T-shirts here. No, Cavs are here.
Cavs are here.
And t-shirt time.
T-shirt time.
Sean Shreve, RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. We got Peyton and Carter getting it live on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Gavin Spittle and Zach Rowe texting me. Did you see the Cowboy news? More from Tom Pelissero, who had the news of the Dalvin Cook visit last night. We'll talk to Nick Harris about it at 9:20 from DallasCowboys.com. Pelissero with this. The Cowboys are waiving tight end Peyton Hendershot. He played in 25 games over the past two seasons. One to watch on waivers.
Boy, I admire the Cowboys. I wish we could waive Peyton, and we haven't done it.
Jeez,
but
hey.
No, Hendershot, look, if Hendershot's wanting to try and cobble together another gig somewhere else, he put good tape out there in the final game. He blocked his ass off in that game the other day. And so if you're talking about trying to catch on somewhere, somebody wanting to buy low on you and see if they can invest in you, Hendershot's got a chance. It's just there's a lot there. There's a lot there. There's a reason he went undrafted. There's a reason why, you know, there have been these random, you know, oh, Peyton Hendershot's not at practice. He's got an absence today.
Oh.
It's just there's a lot going on at times. And so I think they just felt like, we're not seeing the return on some of the patients here.
All right, before we get to final roster, cut down 53, Jerry obviously pulling a Chris Young in saying we're not going to add anyone else. They may be adding with Dalvin Cook. Anything else we should be looking out for before we move on?
Yeah, I'd be looking out for, Archer had kind of mentioned maybe they're not that high on Carl Lawson, or maybe Carl Lawson's not the guy. I think they still have not figured out Edge. So whether it's a trade or a signing or, you know, claiming somebody off waivers, I think Cowboys are going to be looking at edge rusher today and the next couple days.
Edge rusher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, over to the association.
Subscribe for Pelissero notifications to find out who it'll be, I guess.
Man. Or, what's her face?
Don't say it.
I got the name. I know it.
Now. I know okay. You do.
All right. Jason Kidd, NBC Bay Area, is giving the props for Klay Thompson to the lead recruiter in the process.
You know, I think when you talk about the recruitment, it was a lot of people that were involved in that. But I think one of the biggest players in that was Kai. Kai being able to player to player, given his experience of what Dallas has been like for him in 2 years, and being able to tell Klay the honest truth of what he thinks can happen with Klay coming to Dallas. And I think I would love to say it was all me, but it wasn't. I think it was a team effort, but I think player to player, and that's in this league, they all talk about their situations and they all recruit one another, but truly, I believe Kai and Klay being able to talk, and I also believe Klay did his homework. And so just understanding the situation, because it would have been easy for him to stay, so he had to put in some effort of doing some homework to see what Dallas was all about.
Well, speak of the devil and he shall appear. Breaking news from Todd Archer. The Cowboys are meeting with defensive end Tyus Bowser. So edge rusher Tyus Bowser, formerly the Ravens, missed all of last year. Former second-round pick, a guy the Cowboys liked a lot coming out in the draft. Same year as Carl Lawson. He is visiting today with Dalvin Cook.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is an example, in my opinion, of why you should Tolo.
Mm-hmm.
Others may get to this tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
You'll get it right here on the home of the Cowboys with Bobby Roberto Bell and the guests that we had on at 8 o'clock. And I have a scouting report on Dalvin Cook with the great Brian Broaddus watching his tape already. Go ahead.
Did you ever play with Bowser on Mario Kart?
No.
You know what? I regret going to Choppy.
That's kind of hard-hitting stuff that I'm going to bring with you, okay?
Okay. Nick Young.
Swaggy P.
Really quickly, I just want to point out, I love that we're now past the question of is Kyrie happy here, and instead we're on to the idea of Kyrie's not only happy here, Kyrie is doing things to tell other people, like, this is the place where you're going to find peace. This is the place where you're going to realize that this is where you need to be.
Nick Young says people are scared to admit that Kyrie Irving is better than Steph Curry. Quote, Kyrie is the Kobe to Steph's Michael. People are scared to say he's better. So Nick Young saying that Kobe better than Mike and that Kyrie better than Steph. This guy is approaching all-time dumbass territory. Whenever he speaks, I know it's a clown show. Nick Young. You missed Rashid last week saying Wizards MJ was more dangerous than Bulls MJ.
In the sense that he was fatter?
What a stupid ass take.
Like maybe Michael's, I mean, you stronger, can't even, you can't even say jumper. His mid-range. I'm not even sure you could say his mid-range was better.
Right.
Like his mid-range in like the late, you know, the in the second Bulls three-peat was just.
To be fair, I think Rasheed Wallace was high for most of Michael Jordan's time in the 90s. It wasn't until he got to Detroit, things kind of calmed down for him.
Is this, you know, sometimes you'll have like barbershop arguments. Like, Isaiah Ryder was one forever. Oh, man, J.R. Ryder, man, he is really the truth. This guy's better than this guy. Is Kyrie Irving a more, even a better player in barbershops and YMCA talk than we talk about? Obviously, we know he's going to the Hall of Fame. He's an all-time great skills player. But, like, Iverson. Iverson was that guy. You know, for many people. Yeah. Iverson's better than Mike, or Iverson's better than Kobe, because Iverson was cooler. And Iverson's skills were and-one-esque and,
handles,
you know,
handles
badass.
And handles play in a barbershop.
Handles play.
Handles play in a barbershop. Like, you know, you don't see anybody.
Like, not one person ever will say or has said that I've heard that Kyrie Irving is going to be better all-time than Steph Curry.
Yeah, you don't hear people in a barroom argument or a barbershop argument say, man, you know what, that quarterback, he is really on time with his throw.
Right.
They don't. It's just an undervalued.
Yes. He hits the open man.
Yeah. It's an undervalued trait. They look at arm strength. They look at. It's the same thing in basketball. Basketball. It's not like, boy, you know, that's a deadly 12-footer he's got.
Right.
No. It's about handles. Right. That's what plays.
Yeah.
He's essentially. I do think he's revered because you talk about the AI, you know, reverence that exists, and because of. He was cool and he was super skilled and everything else. I think Kyrie is the culmination of like what people wanted AI to be in terms of like Kyrie's a better shooter. Kyrie's a cleaner player overall, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so I think it's kind of like, well, this is the progression of what like we kind of wanted AI to fulfill. And so any of those AI like fans that exist from back in the day are going to, I think, lean really heavily on Kyrie.
Choppy, I'm so happy that Magic Johnson allowed us to revisit this topic because I was dreading it when you were out and I said it on air. I wish Choppy was here for this.
I know.
Ant Edwards saying that Michael Jordan basically was the only skilled player from the 90s or back in the day, and Stephen A. Smith brought that up to Magic Johnson.
You know, I don't never respond to a guy that's never won a championship. There's not nothing to really say. He didn't win a college championship. I don't know if he even won a high school championship.
So that's Magic, trying to bury Ant Edwards. And are you saying Kevin Garnett is doing the same thing?
Kevin Garnett apparently went off on it in an interview with Paul Pierce.
Did he make up fake curse words like he said about Dirk?
No, I have not seen that. But yeah, the headline, the quote headline
Did you hear us talk about that?
I did not.
Kevin Garnett tried to say that Dirk was like dropping the N-word on him.
Oh, it was yesterday.
Oh, it was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
I had a choppy memory there slip. Yeah. And Paul Pierce is like, no, Kevin, no. He never said that.
Yeah.
Don't make that up.
What he tells Paul Pierce about Anthony Edwards, the quote was, I don't think half of these kids in the league could have been on an NBA team 20 years ago. So he thinks that his era, of course, he's becoming the old crusty a little bit already. Garnett is. He's saying back in my day, 20 years ago when Dirk was working my ass, it was pretty tough for these kids.
Everybody protects their era. They all do. But this is like a it's really building. And it's been building to a crescendo for a while. The attack on from the current NBA player, you don't see this in the other sports. Like in football, like the guys today, like
even with the guy we had in studio yesterday.
Well, like the guys today, I think recognize that the football players like 20 to 40 years ago played in a more brutal era. They got gnarled fingers, they got brain injuries. They're like, you know, we get it. Yeah. We're not going there. Like these guys sacrificed literally their brains. Baseball, there's a philosophical difference from guys who played in the 90s and before. They just don't get why batting average isn't a thing anymore and guys can't hit. It's the way they're
There's a toughness thing too.
There's a toughness thing.
There's takeout slides. There's beaning hitters.
The attack is not as bad as it is in the NBA. Like the player today, the guy in the 90s is like they're playing defense right now. The 90s player.
Do you know why though? Like at least for me, typically I think
playing defense with what?
Well, they're just like they have to defend their era more than any of the other sports. I feel like baseball, I think it's philosophical. Football, you don't really hear much of it. Basketball, like, okay, look, are they more skilled today? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
There were, when Jordan played and when Magic played, you had, of the five guys on the floor, maybe three, if you were lucky, who could shoot beyond the arc. Maybe on the floor at any given time. Yeah. Everybody else was a mid-range guy. It's a completely different sport. It is completely different. They are so much more skilled.
Like, Michael Jordan, like, I'm really a nerd. It's embarrassing. But we're just talking about Iverson and Kyrie. You don't see ever Michael Jordan dribbling highlights. Now, people will say he didn't have to. But Michael Jordan never tried to be Tim Hardaway for a moment.
Oh, no.
Or Allen Iverson for a
moment.
He did
not cross you up.
Michael's not going to.
He blew by you.
Yeah, he blew by you.
But he didn't crush
you. But there's never any, like, dribbling skill.
There's one video. There's the one. The Bird. Through the legs three times.
Yeah.
Jump rope. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think the thing that upsets so many of these players so much is that typically when you have thrown back to an area, you're talking about, well, okay, well, what did 60s baseball players do? They couldn't hang today. Babe Ruth couldn't hang today. Like, you hear those sort of things. Bonds was a 90s player who everybody still reveres as, like, oh my gosh, that's the pinnacle. Guys in the 90s, you know, big time players in the 90s in the NFL are still revered as like, man, that dude was a stud. This is this feels really early for a lot of these guys to think that they have to defend their era. Like, man,
yeah, but you know what? You know what, man? These guys have also done it to themselves to a degree with this load management. This load management is awful.
It's very bad. It's
so when they talk about the lack of toughness with these guys today or whatever, look, this is a fact of human life. Every generation believes, and is probably right, everyone believes that the generation after is softer. My sure. dad believes we're soft, and I believe that my kids are going to be softer. That's just the way, that's a fact. And it's probably true. It's probably true. We are going to believe that the next generation after, no generation that's younger is ever going to be regarded or thought of as tougher than an older one.
They will not. They will not be regarded as tougher. Look, I will tell you this. They are. No, I can just know this from like my kids from sports. There is no doubt at 14 years old that like my kids' baseball team is far more skilled than my high school team at 17 or 18.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not even close.
Just look at the MPH.
That's it.
That's it.
There's kids at 14 throwing 85. There's a kid at 14 throwing 93. That didn't happen.
No.
25 years ago.
No.
I don't believe the radar guns anyway. I mean, I think they're juicing these things half the time, but especially they're just so much. They're just so much more skilled.
So what are you trying to say overall with the NBA?
Like, yeah, they are more skilled. You can't argue that. Like, is it fair to say Michael was the only skilled player? If you're calling it from the constructs of today's NBA. Like, that's not true. Hardaway was skilled. Like, you had guys out there.
Hakeem.
That were skilled. But, yeah, like, for the most part, go look at, go watch a Jack Nicklaus versus Tom Watson 1983 British Open.
No, thanks.
It will look like two hacks out there on the golf course. It will. The golf course is sucked. They're whacking the ball just to putt it 11 feet because they couldn't get the greens low enough. Like, it's a completely different world that we play in now.
You have to adjust everything for era.
You do.
Every sport has to be adjusted for era because modern medicine and science and everything else, weight training, everything is different. Ant Edwards growing up in the same era Michael Jordan grew up in is not able to get anywhere close to Michael.
Like, Ant Edwards in a one-on-one game would annihilate and destroy Reggie Miller.
Oh, my God.
Destroy. Yeah. Now, do I want Reggie Miller on my team in the fourth quarter over Ant Edwards? Yeah, I can make the case.
It's in the garden.
I want those 17 points a night.
Here you go. There you go. 877-881-1053. Franklin Franco, injury attorney, text line in order to hit us up. Crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece is at 940, but let's talk about CeeDee's deal, Dalvin Cook, and Nick Harris. is a Deuce Vaughn defender, apparently, with the final 53 happening today. Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com after this. Ton of Cowboys news to get to. Cut down day is upon us, and so is CeeDee Lamb's contract. In case you missed it, 34 a year, 100 guaranteed, 38 with the signing. Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com. Nick, did you look at any of the terms and say, okay, that's why this took so long? That was the holdup.
Yeah, not at all. You could look at it and see, man, this is a deal that could have gotten done in April. But nevertheless, it's not perfect timing. That's what I wrote yesterday, but it is still timely nevertheless. 13 days before their opener, they'll have a couple of practices to get him back integrated with Dak Prescott in the offense. But yeah, guys, I didn't see any of those terms and look at it and be like, okay, now that's a reason why this could have taken so long. Yeah, but the 4 years, $136 million, it looks like that's what CD wanted at the end of the day, both with the money, the guaranteed money at $100 million, the signing bonus at $38 million. These are all things that prove that CD Lamb won at the negotiation table at the end of the day. Maybe it was just a situation where CD wanted to wait out as long as he could, and he ended up doing that, and that's what he got in the end.
And I think I recall you saying you thought this was going to get done when everyone got back to Frisco, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Don't want to toot my own horn here, but yeah.
Well, we need to give you credibility as our guest now. So it's now selfish for us and important for us. So we need to make sure that you sound good and credible.
Yeah, fair. I mean, it makes sense, right? You look at Zach Martin last year, whenever Jerry Jones and the team, they were able to come back to Frisco for that weird mid-preseason home game that they had last year against Jacksonville. It allowed the two sides to sit down at the negotiation table and get something done. And, you know, while CeeDee Lamb has been in South Florida, while the team has been in training camp, it still allowed an opportunity for, you know, the Cowboys to be back in Frisco to meet with his representation. And then CeeDee got the phone call to let him know it was done. So he's back on his way to the facility, should be there today to do his physical and sign the paperwork. And the expectation is that he'll be at practice tonight for the fan night, but a lot of steps to get to before he can walk out on the field.
Nick Harris from DallasCowboys.com joining us. Nick, so when they look at Lamb, do you think part of the Cowboys' thought process here in slow playing it is, look, if there's anybody on the field, if there's any position or any player that we can afford to slow play, it might be Lamb because of the type of offseason work he gets with Dak, because of the familiarity, because the offense is in the second year. Do you think they felt like they were losing less than if somebody like Micah Parsons, for instance, had held out for all of camp?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you look at the work that CeeDee Lamb was putting in South Florida, and you kind of understand what he was doing with Dak before they left for Oxnard as well. Now, granted, he wasn't on that receivers quarterbacks trip that everybody took up to Oregon right before training camp. You know, you look at that, and that's probably an instance where you're like, okay, I probably would have liked to see CD on that trip if you're looking at it from the front office's perspective, just because everybody raved about how much work they got done out there and the reps that they were able to get. That could have been super valuable for 88. But you're right. I think there's some truth to that. He's young. He's a guy that has a lot of experience with Dak Prescott already. You know, Dak, he said during training camp in a walk-off that it's only going to take him one or two practices to get back in rhythm with CD. However true that is, I think, again, yeah, it could speak to maybe wanting to wait as long as possible to get this done. But, you know, now they have these 12 days. Days are counting now until they head off to Cleveland. And would I expect him to maybe be a 60-snap guy in week one? Maybe not. But I he's going to be integrated in the offense enough to where, you know, it's going to look like him and Dak are back in synergy.
Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com on the D&M Leasing Hotline. So are they practicing in front of the fans tonight? And do you think CD could be out there?
Yeah, it's scheduled to be a walkthrough tonight, so I wouldn't expect anything too crazy. CD, the expectation, again, it is that he is there, but he's got a lot of steps to go through today with physical and signing the paperwork and making sure that he can step out there. But I think the expectation is that he's going to be on the field tonight.
Are you interested in Dalvin Cook?
You know, it doesn't really move the needle for me personally. I went back yesterday. I was like, okay, let me see if there was anything that I maybe missed from the 2023 season. And I did miss a couple of things. It was a lot worse than I expected. And, 214 yards on 67 carries. I mean, it was a pretty bad year for Cook last year. But you look at 2021, you look at 2022, they were really productive years. Granted, he was in Minnesota. He was in a system that he was really used to being in. But for me, it doesn't really move the needle. I think if it's a situation where, hey, you could stash him on the practice squad for a few weeks, and, you know, if an injury happens in that room, you can elevate him and see what he can bring to the table, then maybe I understand bringing him on. But as far as adding him to the roster, I would assume it would be over a guy like Deuce Vaughn. I just don't know if that's worth doing at this point, especially for a price tag he could be asking for.
I thought I saw you tweeting in defense of Deuce Vaughn on social media and some of the blocking that he may not have been getting throughout his short Cowboys career. Are you a big-time Deuce fan now?
I wouldn't say I'm a big-time Deuce fan, but I think he's done enough to earn a spot on this roster. And not only that, I think he's done enough to earn a role on this offense. You know, I think there's going to have to be a little bit more creativity for him going into year two than there was in year one as far as getting him the ball in correct situations. I mean, it was really difficult to be able to see where Deuce Vaughn would have space to make things happen last year. And you look at those carries, I mean, he's having to shed guys off in the backfield almost as soon as he's taking the ball. Now, granted, I did say in that same tweet, yes, there's a couple of bad reads here, but I don't think there's anything that anyone could have done with the opportunities that Deuce Vaughn was handed last year during the regular season. I think there just may need to be more of an intention in figuring out how to get him the ball in space, because once you get him the ball in space and he's able to make one guy miss, I think that's when Deuce Vaughn is at his best.
Nick, we got cut down day later this afternoon. Cowboys already kind of started on that a little bit. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Nick Eatman yesterday. When you look at this cut down, who do you think is going to be guy 53 and who is guy 54?
Oh, that's a tough one. Guy 53, I am going to have to go with I'll probably have to go with Brevin Spanford. I think wow. He sneaks on as the fourth tight end on this roster. I like the investment that they put towards him going into the training camp. It kind of speaks to how much they believe in him coming out of the process. I think he's still a guy that they can use in these big tight end sets. I mean, if you think Mike McCarthy's not going to take four tight ends, then we might be all fooling ourselves. But who knows? I might be the fool at the end of the day when they take three. So I think it's going to be Brevin Spanford as guy 53, guy 54. Oh man, that's a tough one. You know, I'd probably have to look at I'd probably have to look at a guy like maybe like Matt Wiletzko, just to kind of see, you know, offensive line depth. Obviously, you need it there. But you look at a guy like Josh Ball, who had such a great preseason, kind of shocked me, I would say. I think he's probably ended up taking that spot. So maybe I'm looking at a guy like Wiletzko, but I think there's a couple of contenders there for 54.
Nick, we appreciate it. Thank you, man. Enjoy practice.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a great one, fellas.
You too. Nick Harris brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. Mike Florio has responded. We got 8 o'clock booked for the rest of the week.
Oh, baby.
Ooh. Tomorrow is going to be Thomas Dimitroff, former NFL GM. Thursday, Pat Doney with the big high school football preview. Friday, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. Whale alert.
Whale alert.
Did the whale swim across the screen? I did not check.
I don't know.
Florio is responding to Jerry Jones, basically telling Clarence Hill, hey, no one can effing do this job better than me as a GM. Florio, the results speak for themselves. For the first 30 Super Bowls, the Cowboys played for the right to play in the Super Bowl 16 times. For the last 28, zero. No other GM would have survived that, and plenty of others from the group Jerry deems to not be good enough have won titles. The bottom line is he does it because he can, and there's no one to tell him not to, and because the fans keep giving him their money, time, and attention. If that would ever end, if the fans would ever organize and ignore the Cowboys until he hires a GM, Jones would have a tough decision to make. With the Cowboys still America's team, despite nearly three decades of not good enough, he's more than good enough to keep doing what he's done. So that's Mike Florio.
Do you at all, and we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, do you at all break Jerry's tenure up?
Yeah. I'm glad you took the words out of my mouth. Here's my question that I was saving. Is Jerry Jones Kevin Durant? Are Jerry Jones' titles equal to Kevin Durant's titles?
Ooh. No. No, they're much more valuable.
They are?
Not even close. Look.
Because you know the perception.
I know. I Jerry gets 1,000% of the credit for hiring Jimmy Johnson.
Agreed.
And, you know, if a CEO hires a great person under him
get the credit.
He gets the credit.
Yeah.
Jerry's the only one who doesn't get the credit. It's wild to me. It's crazy. Like, that's what the job of an owner is.
Well, I think.
Or the GM or whatever you
want to call it. I think the reason that it's crazy to you, and the reason it is because it was so long ago, number one. And number two, there's no one else with Jerry's like GM staying power because of the situation. Like, if Jerry Jones stopped being the GM 20 years ago, we might be talking about him as an all-time great general manager. But because he stayed on so long and they've done nothing since, championship relative, nothing, it gets forgotten and dinged.
Yeah, and also flip the timeline. What if he went 28 years without it, and then they win 3 and 4 years?
Then he's Tom Landry.
Right. No kidding.
You know, it's...
What do you think? Jerry's titles to Durant's titles. Who do you give more credit to? Whose titles do you acknowledge more?
I mean, they are... Jerry has a claim on those. Like I don't think those are just not his. In fact, if you want to say... It's funny. I think Jerry... This is going to sound weird. I think you can maybe make the claim when you look at it that the first two years they won Super Bowls when Jimmy was here feels like more of something Jerry can lay claim to, in my opinion, than he can the third one when Jimmy wasn't here. Because I feel like the third one was, when you hear the players talk about that era, they just like leveled up. It was a toxic atmosphere and they were just like, we're doing this. We're taking over. Aikman's going to run practice. We're maybe we're not prepared, but we're so talented and it's just bleeding over. Is that there was really nothing.
Even that title's Jimmy's.
The
first two titles are Jimmy's and the third title is definitely Jimmy's. Yeah,
but Jimmy gets credit for a title he wasn't even there on.
Right.
That's how fickle credit is.
But the first two, like, I do think Jerry like shares credit. That it's more Jimmy.
Yeah.
But I think Jerry definitely deserves credit for, you know, hiring Jimmy Johnson, sticking with him when there was widespread. A lot of people don't remember this. There was, at the end of 1 year, there were a lot of people saying Jimmy should be 1 and done. You went 1 and 15. He's over his head. You hired a whole college staff. You hired your buddy. This is a bad decision. Didn't do it. Didn't react to it. I think that there's more that you can actually say is there. Now, I break it up in eras. There's the Jimmy era. There's the post-Jimmy era. And then there's the Will McClay era, where I think he's just approached the team in those three different eras completely different in terms of the way he runs it.
Here's what it comes down to for me. Jerry Jones wants to be the prom king wearing the varsity jacket. This is my theory. And he has a football insecurity, in my opinion, that he wants to vanquish with a championship, quote unquote, on his own. And he's just dying. He doesn't care, right? Rock stars want to be movie stars and movie stars want to be athletes. And Jerry Jones cares, but doesn't care the most about being an all-time great genius billionaire businessman. Jerry Jones craves and yearns and goes to sleep thinking about being regarded as a football guy. Not the guy in the suit. The guy who can sit in the meeting room with the X's. That is what haunts him. That is what drives him. And that is what holds the Metroplex hostage. Because Jerry Jones has held DFW hostage with his refusal to do it any other way. Now, maybe that gets me in trouble. That's just a fact. That's not a theory in my mind. That's not an opinion. It's a fact. He is dying to be looked upon first as Coach Jerry, like it was Coach Al Davis, versus businessman Jerry and businessman Al Davis.
I think anybody who thinks Jerry doesn't want to win a Super Bowl is completely wrong. I think the nuance there is that Jerry
wants to win
Jerry
it his way.
He wants to win it his way.
Yeah,
more
he views his way as which is like selfish, the only way.
Which is selfish. So there are some people who believe that the team is the city's team. Some people believe that. That they are just
the keeper.
And there are some people, and I'm not saying I would be any different. I'm a billionaire, has my own damn team. That'd be pretty freaking awesome and cool. They're like, it's my team. I think Jerry views it as his team. I'm going to do it the way I want. It's my ring of honor. It's my timeline. It's mine. And here we are. Crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece is next. Let's crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece, Kevin Hagelin, Mike Bacsik, and Corey Majors.
Did you see they put out a new Untold today, but it is not part two of the Steve McNair story, as some people desperately were grasping on to hope that it would be.
Oh, what is it?
It's about the...
Connor Stallions?
Yes.
Michigan sign stealing scandal.
Ooh. Yeah.
Spoiler alert, he says he didn't do it.
There goes the segment for tomorrow. Pulling the audio.
What did you think he was going to say? That already is circulating out. I was like, Connor Stallion says he didn't do it.
Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
So you're spoiling stuff you have seen, stuff you haven't seen.
Are you not going to watch it because of that one line?
This is Crosstalk, not Masterpiece Theater.
Okay? I mean, at this point, I don't have to watch the Greg Maddux thing. I've heard the whole thing already.
On social media?
On this show. On Sean and RJ and Bobby and Peyton.
Thank you.
I do kind of feel that way sometimes when it's Hard Knocks, like in the past. Not this year as much, but in the past, I felt like all the good stuff that was out there in Hard Knocks was clipped and posted, and you can just see it on Twitter.
Yeah.
What's coming up, Corey?
Laura Rutledge joins us at 10:20 today. So we'll talk with her about how the Cowboys are looked at nationally. And
talking to the wrong Laura.
SEC.
No.
Laura Miller?
No, I'm just making a joke. Oh. Keep going.
Laura Rutledge could be my sports media crush.
Oh, really? Let me ask you a question then.
Then she had a baby.
Can I ask you a question, Mike? I want Mike to ask this question.
I'm not going to ask this to Laura Rutledge, but I want to ask a question like this to somebody that I know way better. I don't know her at all.
Better.
If you got better at your job, over the next year, but you put on weight and you didn't look as good, do you think that you would lose your job based off of your looks more than your ability?
Ask Slater that. She was talking about that in Oxnard.
Because I do think that their job is based more off of their looks than it is their ability. And I'm not saying Laura Rutledge isn't awesome at her job or whoever, but I do think that there's this understanding from a woman like that job is more based off of your looks first, your ability second. And then when do you get to the point where your looks don't determine your job status?
Good question.
And an example of that would be?
Don't.
I'm just messing
with you.
I know what you're saying. I think I know what you're saying.
Did somebody get fired recently off of their looks going away?
I don't know. But I think that you could say the same thing for guys. Who's the hideous looking dude?
You can't say the same thing.
No, it's not the same. It's not the same. But fair. Find a TV anchor, and I don't mean a reporter. I mean find an
news
anchor.
People.
Yeah.
Okay.
TV anchors are generally great hair, chiseled jaw. That's just
a restaurant hostess. They want to hire. Yeah.
Tell us more, Matt Rife.
They want more attractive people up front.
Is there any particular place that you can think of?
No place that I care to advertise for or help out.
Still?
It's like the Cowboy cheerleaders. I thought their standard line in that documentary was, your kicks need to be higher. And that was basically, I thought them being like, you're too fat. Or,
oh my gosh.
You gain weight or you're not pretty enough. Your kicks. No one gives a crap about their freaking kicks.
What was the...
When's the last time you sat in the stands unless you're a high school cheerleading team and you're like, I don't like the execution of that toe touch right there. No one cares.
Was it Knocked Up where they, in the movie, he describes it to the anchor. He's like, we'd like you to be tighter.
It's
like, you want me to lose weight? And he's like, no, just tighter. A little firmer.
We can't say that. We can't say you want to lose weight. Yeah. We need to
tighten your
tone.
What are you laughing at?
Somebody on the fan text. I'm not going to say what they said. I thought it was funny.
Okay. What's on that notepad?
My notes.
Spagnola's chicken scratch.
My notes.
Look at that.
Oh, do you have a license plate written on there?
No, I don't know what that is.
That's a time.
That wasn't for me. That was for somebody else.
Do you think that you have bad handwriting?
I mean, I'm not really trying there. I was just scribbling down, writing quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have try-hard handwriting?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, do you have try-hard handwriting? Yeah. Right on the bottom, try, we're doing crosstalk with on the fan. And I want to see how neat it is.
See his try-hard handwriting?
Yes.
Man, this is going to take like 2 minutes.
I
told you this is going to take forever.
He needs a different pen. I got a really good pen.
You don't try hard to write? I do with like a check.
Yeah. Like this pen is a, it's a
bleeder.
Ink. It's a bleeder. So you get like, you, we got a bleeder. Letters run together.
Here, use this one. This one's a really good pen.
This is a good one?
It's a really good pen right there.
Ooh, a Sharpie.
Yeah. Mike, I want to. What? We're doing crosstalk. Just write a sentence. So the Greg Maddux part of this documentary that blew my mind was the way he called his pitches. I want to know how common this is and what other tricks were out there. Do you know the clip that I'm talking about?
I know that he would call his pitches based off how he caught the ball or walking back to the mound. Like, I didn't see this.
Or like brushing his face.
Yeah, I know all of these.
Like, how common. Giving him credit for being a genius when a lot of other people did this?
Not a lot of other people did this, no. Oh. So I
like
will
catching
say this,
the ball away and having that be fastball away and then letting it get closer to you and catching it on your body to be fastball in, that blew me away.
You know, there was a shortstop that called most of the pitches for his team.
Cal?
Yep.
And no wonder they never won.
Cal would at times, the catcher would look at him and he would, whether it was just, you know, stand up tall or put his hands on his knees or hands on his hips or just like kind of scratch his nose or take his hat off. He would have different things for the catcher to be like, call this pitch. This is the pitch you need.
I'll tell you, if I wanted to learn how to get a hitter out, I would ask a 267 hitter too.
Oh, gosh. You're going after Mike's son and my childhood, the milkman.
Wow.
I grew up on Cal Ripken right there.
Great eyes. Blue eyes.
Fantastic.
He didn't have a problem with the son. Josh Hamilton did.
Without Choppy answering first, everybody answer, because obviously he has a problem with Cal Ripken Jr.
Yep.
Derek
Jeter.
Who's more overrated? You just got my question. Who's more overrated to you in the history of baseball, shortstop-wise, I guess, or just baseball-wise? Is it Cal Ripken Jr. or Derek Jeter is more overrated? We'll start with Sean, and then we'll work our way to Kevin, Bobby.
No, can you go the other way? I want to look up Cal's stats again.
Yeah. Corey. Who's more overrated in the history of baseball, in your opinion, Cal Ripken Jr. or Derek Jeter?
I mean, it's Jeter. Jeter, he finished with a .310 batting average in his career. Did he have two MVPs?
Nope. He had zero MVPs.
Yeah, Cal Ripken
had the most overrated play in baseball
MVPs.
History.
Derek Jeter was on the most stacked lineup in all of baseball ever, and he benefited from it all the time. Cal Ripken was a one-man act.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what about when he hit the pop up to Tony Tarasco and they called it a home run?
Can you believe it?
That was a pop.
Bobby, Derek Jeter or Cal Ripken Jr., who's more overrated?
It's Jeter, but I will say I've always viewed Cal Ripken as kind of like baseball's Marcus Allen.
Oh. Ooh, that's a good one.
A murderer? What?
Marcus Allen?
What? Oh, yeah, there is that theory. I have heard that theory.
Oh, no.
That was the alternate McNair theory y'all been talking about.
So two votes for Derek Jeter.
I also vote for Jeter.
3-0 Derek Jeter, more overrated than Cal Ripken Jr. Oh, Sean, what are we going to do here?
I don't have a hardcore opinion, but I'll slightly vote Jeter just because Cal's power numbers.
4-0 Jeter.
Jeter won rookie of the year.
I'm not going hard on it.
It's not the guy with the 6th most hits all time, I'll tell you that.
Did Cal Ripken Jr. win rookie of the year?
He won rookie of the year and 2 MVPs.
How many MVPs did Jeter win again?
0.
Cal career average was .276, higher than I thought, even with all those batting stances, and he hit 431 home runs. Okay.
Jeter did fall into the stands, though, in a playoff game, and it looked super cool.
No, that was not a playoff game.
Oh, it was even less important.
That was a July game.
Yeah, makes sense.
That was a July game.
And then he flipped a ball to the catcher that was totally going to make it in time anyway. And
I
don't think it would have.
All right. So do you have anything else to say about this subject?
Well, I'm talking to 4 people who don't know baseball and Mike, who is not answering this question.
So recently, I'll just tell you.
You know his answer. His kid isn't named Derek.
Recently, I tried to for Dirk. But recently, I have bought Derek Jeter and Cal Ripken Jr. cards because I love them both.
But you answer your own question.
Who's more? I don't think either. I think both of them, in a way, are underrated because people keep putting them in overrated categories. If that makes sense.
All right. So for, I think they're you both. Get to draft one, You have the number one pick. You have to pick between one of the two for 10 years.
And I like get them at 20 years old at, yes. in 2024. I guess I would lean towards Cal Ripken Jr. because he had more power.
Okay.
Like in today's game.
In today's game.
That
in the era they played in, Jeter was probably more valuable, but in today's era, like, I think Cal is.
He had more power because of his home run numbers. Is that?
Yeah, I would
because
say
because like
that
slugging percentage was lower and his OPS was lower.
Then Jeter?
Yeah. For his career. But I mean, Jeter didn't. Cal had a fall off like in the last several years that he didn't. Because I mean, Ripken was.
No, that's good to know.
He was like an OPS plus guy above 100 for.
So
like
Jeter
a
probably
straight.
Had a lot more doubles,
sorry,
I'm assuming.
My apologies. Jeter's slugging was 7 points less.
Yeah, I was than, like, he can't
than,
like,
Cal, but his OPS
is
OPS.
This is like he's
was
the
higher.
Math guy on the show.
OPS was higher. Right. Yeah, I mean, Jeter had more speed, so he probably had more doubles. Like, just he probably was able to stretch.
Oh, he definitely had to have had more doubles.
I mean, look, if Cal
can be bold and say Cal triples.
But Cal had more power, so like you would think he would get the ball into the
actually,
gaps
no.
easier.
Cal Ripken had 603 doubles. Derek Jeter had 544.
Corey, I'm not trusting anything you say anymore.
So wait a second.
You messed
so he
it
had,
up already.
But he played longer, right?
I don't know if I could hate a moment in baseball more than hearing Bob Shepard announce an at-bat for Derek Jeter that is then called by Michael Kay.
He played one more year. Cal Ripken played one more year than Derek.
That's it?
RJ's try-hard handwriting is neater than the sloppy.
Okay, good.
Kevin, you can read the sentence to close out the show.
Oh, dear. We are doing Crosstalk on 105.3 The Fan. And I'm sure Bobby's mom was a lovely woman.
Walk off. Ripken walk off, RJ.